This is Mark having a conversation with Talk Popsy's resident philosopher, Laura, at Lincoln Terrace Park in Brooklyn. It is August 2019.
Hello, everyone. This is Talk Popsy, and I am Laura, the resident philosopher, and I am meeting a new person today, and his name is?
My name is Mark.
Mark. Nice to meet you, Mark.
Very nice to meet you.
So you're just hanging out?
I'm just hanging out. Yeah, I live nearby.
Okay.
So, yeah, just...
You came by the park?
That's right.
Do you practice art?
I don't practice it, but I do enjoy it. Absolutely.
You enjoy it? You absorb it?
That's right.
Okay. Do you go to museums, or how do you like to enjoy it?
I mostly follow surrealists. Yeah, like... Salvador Dali or Vasily Kandinsky.
Yeah. Okay. So what attracts you to that kind of work?
It's something that you look at it and it makes you think, what is it that the artist is trying to convey?
Yeah.
Makes your brain work a little harder.
Right. So you get Dali's clocks, right?
That's right.
Melting.
Melting clocks or the fly of the bee or that type of thing.
Yeah, or like the weird ants.
Exactly. It's like things. Something really weird and something that's not very obvious.
It's not obvious. And yet,
right. So you have to kind of...
image, right?
Right. Exactly. It's one of those things where, you know, it could be anything, right? It's what strikes you. Right.
Yeah, you can't deny that it's a melting clock. Right.
Well, and it's definitely one approach.
That's the most obvious object depicted, right?
Well, right.
Yeah.
So that's the most obvious, melting clock. But what is that? What is melting clock? Is it your life? Is it something that just simply melts away as you live it? So it's one of those things where you have to really think.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's sort of... becomes a symbol, right?
Either a symbol or some kind of a message.
A message.
A personal message from the artist back in the day to you now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like an entrance for conversation with
exactly.
a dead person.
Yeah.
Interesting. Think about it.
It is, right.
So do you think that you can have different conversations with the same piece?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you could look at that melting clock today and receive one message. But as you grow older, as you gain more experience, you're changing yourself. In 5-10 years, you're looking at the same exact picture because the picture didn't change at all. Right.
It's still famous.
It's still famous. It's still the same. It's still Salvador Dali. But the message you're receiving is... completely different because you changed.
So you're like become a sort of echo chamber in relation to the artwork.
That's exactly right.
Right, and as you change the dimensions of your chamber, the art reflects differently.
Exactly. It's like watching the same movie 5 years later. You might or reading the same book. Right, the book is the same, but you changed and you get a completely different experience. From doing so, yeah.
So you just can see different things
completely
in it, perhaps?
Different things, as you saw, a few years ago.
Right.
Because you gained something.
Yeah. Have you ever had that experience of looking at something you've seen so many times and seeing some part of it that you never noticed
Absolutely.
Before?
And it could be any type of art.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, could be a book, could be a movie, could be a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. So do you think there's a message, a clear message that Dali is trying to create with his art?
I think so. I think it's a personal message. It's very personal. And there is a reason why that particular picture became famous. So there is a reason why you're standing looking at it.
Well, what's the reason?
Well, the reason might be that you're there at that particular time looking at that picture, receiving a special message, a personal message.
Well, there's a reason that it became famous, you said, too.
Right.
What's the reason for that?
Well, if it wasn't famous, you wouldn't be looking at it. So somebody made it famous. And maybe it's just the underlying theme or the code was so powerful that a lot of people saw very personalized messages to them. And as a result, the picture became famous.
Yeah, there's a sort of gravitation towards certain types of images.
Exactly.
And that changes through the eras, right? If you think about like the transition from realism to surrealism.
That's right.
For instance, or impressionism.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of like forcing reality to be seen in a way that's in which it's maybe ready to be seen or on the precipice of being seen.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Do you ever like think about doing
art?
Art?
No, like, I have a more of a mathematical background,
and
my brain is, I'm an investment banker.
Yeah, there's a sort of strange thing where it's like people who do math seem to, or science, don't anymore seem to do art or think of themselves as creators in that way, right?
Yeah, and I could never draw while I was in school. I had no imagination.
Well, so what about math as a certain type of art?
It is, but it's very precise. It's a different type. Occupies a different part of your brain, obviously. And a beautiful equation is also a piece of art because it's so elegant.
It's a relic, in a way, right?
Right. There's only one solution, and it's a piece of beauty if you think about it.
Yeah, and the math has evolved.
Right? Exactly.
It's changed over time.
Yeah.
So it's, could still change.
It is changing because more and more people are inventing and proving different things. That's why they have a Nobel Prize in math.
Right.
I believe.
And we get like strange things like girdles, incompleteness.
Yep.
Stuff, right?
Infinity and all that.
Yeah. And we don't know what to do with these numbers, right? So it's not all.
Yeah.
Just cut and dry.
That's right.
But in banking.
In
investment banking.
Yeah, there's not
there's
much
a,
art.
Maybe there's a craft to that.
Not much.
Not much.
It's more it's more science, really. It's more.
Well, what's the difference between art and science?
Well, science is a lot more precise. There is a different part of your brain that you need to use for science. An artist is, I guess an artist could be could express himself in many different other ways, where a scientist is a lot more to the point, and there are only a few ways to do things in science. But in art, you could be as free as you can.
So in science, you can't have the same.
In science is more precise. It's more, there are a lot more rules than in art. So you can't really do as many liberal things in science than in art.
Yeah. So it's interesting to think about how the arts and sciences have kind of co-evolved, though, right?
Like right.
If you think about even like artists who were working, like Da Vinci, working on the anatomy of the body.
That's right.
Doing art, portraying the anatomy of the body with accuracy, right? That's sort of like making the borderline between art and science kind of thin.
Yep.
Way, right?
That's,
it's sort of like this
correct.
Interaction, like a dynamic that happens. So, I mean, it could be that art is sort of pulling science forward. I mean, our scientific theories change over time.
Or science pulling art forward.
Yeah.
Could also be the case, right?
Yeah. But I think it's true that scientists don't look at art thinking, oh, here's reality, here's what I must observe and figure out. But maybe that is, science is just comes out of this observation.
Right. That's correct.
we observe art.
We do.
Mark comes to the Talk Popsy conversation as an admirer of surrealism and as an admirer and practitioner of mathematics. These are interesting channels and not unrelated. As an investment banker and wanderer through Lincoln Terrace Park, where this Talk Popsy was held, he knows about math, and he knows about the aesthetic qualities in a well-formed formula, and he likes the oddity of puzzle-teasing and surrealism. "What is this thing I'm looking at?" he asks. He first speaks of Salvador Dali. He asks himself, what is it that the artist is trying to convey? The pleasure in looking at this kind of work is in the figuring things out, untying the knot. He and the resident philosopher Laura touch upon the notion of symbols, one thing referring to another thing, an image mirroring, depicting something else. But Mark prefers to take the discussion in a slightly different way. The artwork is not just a symbol for something, but a message. A message from the artist back in the past to you now. A kind of information portal. What now does it mean? What is Dali's melting clock? Is it, he wonders, just life, which just melts away? This notion of art as a connection between individuals is an interesting way of looking at art, a personal kind of time travel where someone from before is now whispering in your ear, or eye, as the case may be, but it is, as he notes, importantly influenced by the recipient. For what you see in the picture now can be radically different from what you might see 5 or 10 years from now. The picture hasn't changed, but you have. So you now receive a different message. You see things differently, therefore you see it differently. The subject as an echo chamber is how the resident philosopher describes it. We as viewers are not mirroring the picture, we are in part constructing it. Resident philosopher Laura follows this up with the question, is math a certain kind of art? Even though Mark initially wants to emphasize the difference between art and science, he articulates, along with resident philosopher Laura, the similarities between the two. He speaks of the elegance of math and its beauty, and how math is changing and improving. The oddness of infinity, of Gödel's theories, things that we can't quite figure out and name. The notion that both art and science are constructed social paradigms for reality has been pointed out by many philosophers, such as Nelson Goodman, W.V.O. Quine, and more recently in the embodied aesthetics movement. Observation and perception are at the core of both art and science. Perhaps we should ask, is coding in computer science so different from meaning construction in art?